is, as you can tell, quite an expert on the subject. You can always come to his trial, or his, I should say, his hearing, the preliminary, the permanent injunction hearing. Again, that's 9 a.m., Department 5, on Wednesday, February 26th. First come to the Huff meeting at 8 o'clock at Ocean, 1107 Ocean Street at Baker Square, and then walk up the street to Jan's trial. Maybe we can get old Jan to come to the Huff meeting, and we can all huff together. Let's take a little musical break, and then I will rush through the rest of this last 45 minutes of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. That's the show you're listening to here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3.
Well, it's of a bold reporter, a story I will tell. He went down to the Cuban land, the nearest place to hell. He'd been there many times before, but now the law does say the only way to Cuba is with the CIA. William Worthy isn't worthy to enter our door. Went down to Cuba, he's not American anymore. But somehow it is strange to hear the State Department say, you are living in the free world you must stay. $5,000 or a 5-year sentence may well be for a man who had the nerve to think that traveling is free. Oh, why'd he waste his time to see a dictator's reign when he could have seen democracy by traveling on to Spain? William Worthy isn't worthy to enter our door. Went down to Cuba, he's not American anymore. But somehow it is strange to hear the State Department say, you are living in the free world you must stay. So come all you good travelers and fellow travelers too. Yes, and travel all around the world, see every country through. I'd surely like to come along and see what may be new, but my passport's disappearing as I sing these words to you. Well, there really is no need to travel to these evil lands. Yes, and though the list grows larger, you must try to understand. Try hard not to worry if someday you should hear that the whole world is off limits. Visit Disneyland this year. William Worthy isn't worthy to enter our door. Went down to Cuba, he's not American anymore. But somehow it is strange to hear the State Department say, you are living in the free world you must stay.
And that was Phil Oakes, William Worthy, the fellow who went to Cuba back in the late 50s, early 60s, and had his passport revoked. Still not easy to go to Cuba. A couple of things we're going to kind of zip through here. California's Assembly Bill 1421, you may remember, passed last September and was signed by the great liberal Governor Gray Davis. This authorizes involuntary treatment pilot programs, and that involves, the bill is known as Laura's Law, after 19-year-old Laura Wilcox, a Nevada County, California, Nevada County worker who was shot to death inside the county, mental health worker by a person with a mental illness, was very controversial with mental health advocates and organizations sharply divided on the issue. And the issue, eventually what passed was, it enacted so-called the Assisted Outpatient Treatment Demonstration Project Act of 2002, which created an assisted outpatient treatment program for any person who is suffering from a mental disorder and meets certain criteria. It would operate in counties that choose to provide the services, end on January 1, 2008, involve the delivery of community-based care by multidisciplinary teams of mental health professionals for persons with the most persistent and severe mental illnesses, and specify the requirements for the petition alleging that, and this is, of course, the key here, it makes it easier to get people committed is what it does, the necessity of treatment, various rights of the person who is the subject of the petition, and hearing procedures. And this process is coming to Santa Cruz. Each county is going to have the access to do it. And here's a news alert from December. On September 28th, Governor Davis signed AB 1421, the Thompson Bill, which allows counties to opt into an involuntary outpatient commitment program. That means you have to, you are involuntarily required to take your meds, or they come to your house with needles and they take you back to the hospital. That's the deal. I mean, it's pretty Orwellian. Three counties, Stanislaus, Sacramento, and Los Angeles, are currently implementing these services, and I haven't heard anything from these counties, so I can't give you details, through the Integrated Services for the Homeless Mentally Ill program. Note the word homeless. The Board of Supervisors must pass a resolution identifying resources for treatment programs that do not reduce funding for voluntary mental health programs. So with the budget crunch, it may be less likely that they'll pass this involuntary program. However, there is no state-mandated patient commitment program in the LPS laws. That's the Landis-Petras Short Act. That's the laws for involuntary commitment have not been changed. I don't think that's actually true. I think they have been changed. It's easier to commit a person if they are... If you're in a hospital, you can require them to take involuntary outpatient therapy. We have a call here. Let's see what we got. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, Ed.
Hey, Ed.
I want to let you know there's a big, I don't know what you would term it, a visual, like on the Rio Del Mar Bridge going over the freeway of like about 10 women all wearing black with signs, peace now, da-da-da-da-da.
Where is this?
Older women, quite something.
No, where is it?
Rio Del Mar Bridge going across the freeway.
Rio Del Mar?
Yeah.
Where is that?
Aptos.
Oh, I got Rancho Del Mar.
Anyway, the bridge leads into Rio Del Mar Boulevard. I don't know what they
call it. Oh, it could be, yeah. Well, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's quite profound. Yeah, it's like about 10 women all dressed in black with white signs with black
writing. Good for them. Good for them.
Quite something, yeah. Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's good news. Again, getting back to AB 1421, it's coming around to the county Board of Supes at some point, or perhaps it isn't, and we're glad it's not, but people should be alert. Although the California Network of Mental Health Clients and Allies were able to stall initiatives to expand forced treatment for 4 years, ultimately we could not stop this well-funded, highly promoted, and media-supported effort. However, there is no state-mandated patient commitment program. The battle now goes to the local county level. And this particular civil rights for the mentally ill group will be there to fight this regressive idea from becoming a reality in any county. And there's some interesting documents they put out, which I'm going to issue as a flyer under the Huff label. And if people are interested, we can present you with that. It talks about why involuntary outpatient commitment is a bad idea for the county generally, and for people specifically who are caught up in this program. Let's see, I think I may have a little something more on that. Taking a quick look. Let's see, here we go. AB 1421 permits counties to expand involuntary outpatient commitment. It moves California in the wrong and unproven mental health policy direction toward coercion and away from voluntary service. Almost all agree that coercion should not be a substitute for effective care that is sought voluntarily, says the Surgeon General of the U.S., according to Mental Health, a report of the Surgeon General. Informed choice about and control over one's treatment is essential for recovery. AB 1421 removes choice and thus moves away from wellness and recovery. Investing in voluntary, not involuntary, enhanced services is the answer to the suffering that surrounds us, not more forced treatment. Voluntary community-based services that support recovery have never been adequately funded. More forced treatment ignores and attempts to cover up this real problem. Coercive treatment is not an answer to treatment noncompliance. Refusing treatment is often the result of having experienced forced treatment. Fear of involuntary treatment drives people away from the treatment system. Expansion of forced treatment will require administrative costs, petition investigation, police detention, court costs. It could be better spent on pursuing John Golder and people like him. No, I'm sorry, I'm just kidding. It could be spent on increasing the availability of voluntary housing and support. AB 1421 moves California in an unjust and dangerous direction. AB 1421 criteria cast a wide net in vague language and include individuals who are not and never will be dangerous or gravely disabled. If you've previously been diagnosed or held in a mental hospital, I think it's held in a mental hospital twice, that can be the basis for requiring involuntary outpatient commitment for 6 months. They don't have to show that you're currently a danger to yourself, danger to others, or gravely disabled, which is the Landrum-Petras Short Act standard. AB 1421 criteria would deny people the right to equal protection under the law by subjecting persons to different involuntary commitment criteria from one county to the next. For instance, a person's liberty could be curtailed in one county, while it could not be in another. Current commitment law already has the power to force treatment on people who are dangerous to themselves or others or are gravely disabled. The problem is that current commitment law is not uniformly applied throughout the state. Also, those involved in the implementation of current law lack training. AB 34 programs are doing the job and are at risk of being undermined. AB 2034 established integrated services for the homeless mentally ill programs, which are available on a very limited basis in some 30 counties, have helped reduce incarceration, hospitalization, and homelessness. Implementation of this new AB 1421, involuntary outpatient commitment, threatens to undermine the integrity of AB 34. It would associate coerced treatment with voluntary, non-threatening outreach and support. It would change the nature of AB 34 services and cause clients to lose trust in them. This would jeopardize their success. The foundation of involuntary outpatient commitment is discrimination based on centuries-old stereotypes that have been exploited to pass a law. The false stereotype of the violent mental patient underpins the drive to increase forced treatment. This myth is debunked by a MacArthur Foundation study of coercive treatment, which found that the prevalence of violence among people who have been discharged from a hospital and who do not have symptoms of substance abuse is about the same as the prevalence of violence among other people living in their communities which do not have symptoms of substance abuse. The false stereotype that people with psychiatric disabilities have no notion of their condition also fosters the need to increase forced treatment. This myth is debunked by another MacArthur Foundation study, which found that the majority of patients hospitalized with schizophrenia performed adequately on any particular measure of decision-making ability, and about half did well on all the measures combined. The study also found that, taken by itself, mental illness does not invariably impair decision-making capabilities. What the Little Hoover Commission said on changing the commitment laws to make it easier to forcibly treat people with mental disabilities. The Little Hoover Commission, an independent state oversight agency, in being there, making a commitment to mental health, a study, November 2000, on the reform of the Lanterman-Petras Short Law, the commission believes that adequate information has not been developed to fully assess the need for LPS reform. Involuntary treatment laws may need to be reformed, but involuntary treatment should be understood as the last and final resort in a continuum of care that prioritizes voluntary treatment. The Commission believes the debate over LPS reform should be guided by the following analysis. And there's a lot more. We haven't got a lot of time here, so I'm going to skip this. But if you're interested, you can give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, and I'll give you a flyer that goes through this in some detail. The bottom line is we're talking about electroshock, restraints, seclusion rooms, involuntary hospitalization, and forced medication, and I suppose psychosurgery as well, as processes that are used to deal with the so-called mentally ill. This kind of force, to me, mirrors the kind of force that we now see being legitimized with police departments, with oversight being eliminated, legalized internationally in the case of Iraq. It's the wrong way to go, and we see it happening all over. So let's not go there. Let's just not go there. Let's hear a little of this. Now, going back to San Francisco and a few interviews from last Sunday.
Marvin X here at the Civic Center Plaza. Marvin, you've got a display of books, looks like Love and War, and In the Crazy House Called America, and a couple of CDs, some videos. Looks like you're ready to show what's cooking, or tell what's cooking.
Ready to rumble, that's right.
So what is happening here today, from your perspective?
I call it the waking of the dead in the crazy house called America. There's hope in the crazy house. There's hope to transform the crazy house into a stately mansion.
You are so optimistic.
Oh, I am. I think with enough people, anything in the world can be resolved. And I think what's happening this weekend throughout the world and right here today in San Francisco, what happened yesterday in Santa Cruz, is a example of when the dead wake up, they can change things. They can make this a better place. We don't have to go for the okey-doke. We don't have to go for what we're being fed by fools. And people have taken over America that don't represent the true America.
How long have you been trying to wake the dead, Marvin?
About 40 years.
And,
I'm a little tired, but I'm in my, fourth quarter. I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic because, as I keep saying, the people are trying to show that they are not going for the okey-doke.
And that's Marvin X up at the San Francisco Civic Center Plaza, along with hundreds of thousands of others who were there on Sunday. Here's another note of optimism from Sacramento. Homeless, their advocates march for a place to camp by J.D. Sparks, Sacramento B. This was from Tuesday, February 18th. Chanting slogans and carrying signs that read, "Sleeping is not a crime," a group of homeless people on Monday staged a peaceful demonstration against the city's refusal to grant them camping permits. About 35 people, many of whom carried sleeping bags and personal belongings, marched from the Loaves and Fishes shelter on North C Street to Sutter's Landing Park near 28th and C Streets. The march was organized by the Sacramento Homeless Organizing Committee, an advocacy group. "When I see what was happening to the disenfranchised, when I saw what was happening to the disenfranchised, that they were getting tickets and going to jail because there's no place to sleep, it infuriated me," said committee president Clifford Crooks. Crooks and other homeless advocates have applied at least twice for permits to establish a tent city in Muir Park at 16th and C Streets in Sacramento and in Sutter's Landing Park. The city's Parks and Recreation Department has turned down their applications each time. Crooks has said the program, modeled after tent cities in Portland and Seattle, would offer homeless people a safe haven, provide 24-hour security, a drug and alcohol-free environment, and a place where faculty members, family members, and pets can remain together. But city officials remain opposed to the idea. "Our parks are open and designated for open space and recreational uses by the people they serve," said Liz Brenner, city spokeswoman. "Camping overnight is not one of them." She said the city has taken steps to ensure the homeless population is not marginalized, including providing $2 million annually for county shelters and services. On Sunday, the city manager's office made available two vans to shuttle interested demonstrators to the county's winter homeless shelter at the Cal Expo. Open from October 1st through April 30th, the shelter has had more than 50 vacant beds a night for the past week, Brenner said. But she pointed out that some homeless people seem less interested in having adequate shelter if that means they have to abide by shelter rules such as a curfew and participate in social service programs in exchange for a warm, dry bed. Elizabeth Halloway, who took part in Monday's march and who has been homeless for 9 months, said she would prefer to continue to sleep on the streets and give up some of her basic freedoms. "We have our own agenda, our own plans, and our own dreams, and we don't want to be regulated by someone else," she said. So for Halloway and many others, the only alternative is illegal camping. Local officials have intensified enforcement of anti-camping ordinances, issuing several hundred citations a year to homeless people in an effort to clean up the American River Parkway. Halloway said the actions against illegal campers make an already horrible situation worse. "Being poor with no place to sleep is not a criminal offense," he said. But city officials said the decision to remain homeless comes down to a matter of choice. "All cities are grappling with this problem," Brenner said, "but there is a solution, at least today." That's, of course, one of the most notorious lies, oft repeated both in Santa Cruz and in Sacramento. There are, of course, thousands of homeless people in Sacramento who don't have an option to use the 50 vacant beds that are off in the fairground area, whatever that, the Cal Expo. Plus, the curfew times make it difficult for homeless people to work. And no doubt there are rules that make it difficult for families to stay together, difficult to have your pets with you, and other such concerns, which are very real concerns for human beings rather than for ciphers in some sort of social service matrix. And that, of course, is... It also, of course, doesn't cover 95% of the people that are involved, and that, of course, is the big lie that is being spread here. But the big encouraging point is that a tent city is being attempted by the Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee, and there's a lot of correspondence going on between them and Dignity Village, which has a tent city already set up, permanent tent city in Portland for the last 2 years, 3 years now. Here's a kind of a brief letter from them from February 17th. The Sacramento people the right to the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project members, of which I am one. The marchers just left Lowe's and Fish's, headed for C and 21st Street Park, and then to C and 28th Street Park, and then on to 10th City. So far, Channel 3 and 10 were here interviewing. We had some people we never met to show up. Weep from Oakland came up, about six members with banners and literature. It's quite exciting. You know how I must feel. At 21st and C, the vehicular dwellers will join up. Then at 28th and C, quite a few people are expected to meet there. Tommy, our lawyer, won't be there until 6, but he's sending his daughter with her video camera. So it sounds a bit like Camp Paradise in Santa Cruz and other places where people get together. And I've been encouraging people here in Santa Cruz for a long time to restore a campground for poor and homeless people, because that's really the only way you get any kind of security or safety for numbers of people, and at the same time put pressure on authorities to make real changes. Let's see, what have we got here? We've got about 20 minutes left. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And there's some nasty stuff coming down the pike. Oakland has passed the first reading of an anti-loitering law. Council bans hanging out. Police given power to chase people off the streets, by Chris Thompson and Sam Davis. In its most dramatic move against civil liberties in recent memory, Berkeley City Council voted 7-1 on May 10th. Now, this is an old law, actually, but there actually was a vote more recently. They passed this law way back then, but then there was a more recent move to renew this. Let's see here. Oakland Council passes loitering law, February 11, 2003. The Oakland City Council has passed an ordinance Tuesday night that would allow police officers to cite people who they believe to be loitering for the purpose of engaging in drug dealing. More than 200 city residents spoke out against the ordinance at the council meeting, saying the ordinance would violate citizens' civil rights. Just before midnight, the city council approved the ordinance in a vote of 5-3, however. However, the council is scheduled to re-vote on this issue in 2 weeks. That's in 2 days, actually. Tuesday. State law already prohibits loitering with the intent of engaging in drug-related activities. In particular, the Health and Safety Code sets forth a list of circumstances that may be considered when determining whether a person is loitering with the intent to engage in drug dealing. These circumstances include acting as a lookout, repeatedly exchanging small objects or packages for money in a furtive manner, and using signals or language to summon prospective drug buyers. Violations of the state law may be charged as a misdemeanor. A report by City Manager Robert C. Bob notes that the proposed municipal ordinance would essentially mirror state law, with the key distinction being that the city law would allow the offense to be treated as an infraction rather than a misdemeanor. And we'll read a little bit more about this after taking this call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Really, sir, really, this is just too much. I had to call. I can't take this anymore.
Oh,
this
no.
The devil that you're putting on, the homeless indeed. I may be a Brit, sir. I may be a guest in your country. But I feel it is high time, sir, that someone speaks out for the hard-working, staid people.
I see. Well, please, speak away. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're happy to hear your perspective.
I would like to cite to you, sir, one of the great unknown heroes, Mr. Herbert Spencer. Here's what he said, sir. Society advances where its fittest members are allowed to assert their fitness and the least hindrance, and where the least fitted are not artificially prevented from dying out.
I see, sort of a natural selection.
Words to live by, sir. Words to live by.
Yes, yes. Sort of the survival of the fattest, eh?
You're the fittest, sir. Don't misinterpret this great genius, please, sir. Please.
Yes. Well, Herbert Spencer, yes, his social status has always been high on my list.
Are you speak of them? What about Fargo, North Dakota, and Jackson, Mississippi, and Little Rock? Plenty of place for homeless people there. Why do they have to hang out at Santa Cruz, sir? I ask you that. Have you an answer to that? Tell me.
Tickets, perhaps? You have any bus tickets? You wish to provide a special freedom train?
No, sir. I'm not going to finance this city. People can work their way. I tell you, sir, we need to open the workhouses again. That's the solution.
I see.
The British solution to this problem.
Well, it's I'm glad to know that we have some traditionalists out there listening to Free Radio. Okay. Well, perhaps we should hear what other people in the audience have to say about this.
I shall indeed be very interested to see what they have to say about Mr. Spencer's remarks.
Yes, well, of course, he hasn't been around for about 120 years, as I remember.
No matter, sir. No matter. No matter. He was a guru to Andrew Carnegie, sir.
Yeah,
a hard-working man. Too bad he gave it all away.
Yeah, Carnegie. Yeah, well, I remember him. Him and Frick, my old friend.
Lady Thatcher is still alive, sir. Still alive. Lady Thatcher to you, but Maggie to me. I'm aristocratic, of course.
Well, you know, I think, you know, actually, I may recognize that voice, that the tone in your voice, sir. In fact, you remind. Are you calling? Is this a local call?
Of course it is, sir. What do you think? Do you think that I would spend my money to call you from long distance? I hardly think so, sir. Hardly.
Well, then I want to thank you for calling, and I would encourage you, perhaps you could do some educating of the community and fund some bus tickets for those who want to go to Jackson, Mississippi, and Fargo, North Dakota.
I'd like to give them a kick in their ass, sir, if I can say that on public radio.
Hey, you can say what you will, and I'm glad you did. The community will make its choice as to who, in fact, they should pay attention to here.
I should hope so, sir. I should hope so. A very good day to you, sir.
And the same to you.
Indeed.
Thank you. Well, I have to believe, I think that caller may have been putting us on, but he was referring to Herbert Spencer's Social Statics, who I've heard quoted. It's a sort of a conservative thinker from the 19th century, although I must confess I know very little about that. Let me continue reading, however, our 21st century stinkers masquerading as thinkers on the Oakland City Council, who want to add to the current state law, which makes loitering with intent to sell drugs a crime, a new infraction law, so that they can give people tickets without the benefit of a jury trial or a public defender, and they can just sort of load them up with tickies. And here's a little bit more from this article from the Oakland Tribune. An infraction, the equivalent of a traffic ticket and considered less serious than a misdemeanor, is not punishable by imprisonment and does not bog down prosecutors with relatively minor offenses. A person charged with an infraction is not entitled to a trial by jury and is generally not permitted to be represented by a public defender. The proposed law calls for a fine of up to $100 for a first offense, $200 for a second offense, and $500 for a third offense within a year. I think there's a little bit more discussion of this in another article here. Again, using the drug war as a way of attacking civil liberties. The whole drug war, of course, is a way of a huge boondoggle to prison builders and police departments, which actually takes them away from their real function, which is to deal with violent crime and to rehabilitate people who are rehabilitatable. Here's an incoming call. Maybe we've got another Herbert Spencer fan on the line. Hi there, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
Hey, Robert.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, Robert, I wanted to say something about, you know, them people out there that are clamping people's vehicles and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
You know, the other day, one of those Nazi traffic policers came by and actually vandalized my vehicle. You know, my vehicle was vandalized with chalk on my tire, if you can believe that. I mean, I understand in Santa Cruz, chalk is like, you know, almost a dangerous weapon.
Well, chalking is illegal, as that individual Becky Johnson, who has been chalking around town peace symbols. She goes back to trial on March 14th in Commissioner Joseph's court. And actually, if you want to look at her case, she's actually on the Internet. I think she's got an article on Counterpunch, the website Counterpunch, for those who are interested. She's it's her first publication in a sort of a national publication. But Santa Cruz is gaining fame as the city that arrests people for chalking. But apparently, some of these chalkers have badges and guns or ticket books anyway, and you say they're chalking your tires?
Oh, yeah, she was messing up my tires, messed up my whole program. I caught her doing it red-handed. I asked her to stop. I asked her to get out and clean my tire. She actually laughed at me.
Amazing.
So anyway, you know, enough is enough, and anybody who gets their vehicle clamped, and my name is Ray, I'm downtown, and I got a great pair of bolt cutters. And we'll come by after they leave, and we'll pop that son of a bitch off and chunk it in a garbage can, and we'll free your vehicle in the name of the people.
Heavens to Betsy. Well, thank you there, and we'll perhaps you could set up a table downtown, suitably disguised as a flower stand, perhaps.
Yeah, with a couple of bolt cutters, and it only costs you 25 cents.
Well,
the same money that you put in a meter. 25 cents, you can rent my bolt cutters, and we can free your vehicle.
25 cents a snip, eh? Well, thank you, caller.
All right, you guys take care.
All righty, bye bye. Well, it sounds like the natives are getting more restless here in Santa Cruz. We have about 12 minutes left on the show. I've got lots of tape, very interesting interviews from the protest, and I got some interesting tape to follow up on the FAR thing, but I'm afraid we're going to have to wait on that. I want to point out that at the city council meeting at 7 o'clock on Tuesday, day after tomorrow here in Santa Cruz, they're coming back with these weeks sort of softy poo resolutions on the war, which I guess are, you know, anything is better than nothing, or at least everything provides an opportunity for people to say something. That's starting at 7 o'clock with World Communications. Not on the agenda, I want you to note, is the selective enforcement resolution that passed the Citizens Police Review Board after massive hearings in October, which asked that the city not make it a clear policy that its police not selectively enforce laws, but they enforce them fairly, evenly, and with equal protection of the law for each person. Apparently Mayor Riley, who promised that was going to be on the agenda and who was really required to do so by City Council policy, which I think it's policy 5.14, which says, or is it 4.15? It's one of the two, I think, that if a city commission brings a matter to the mayor's attention, she has to either return it with a comment that with some sort of critique or some sort of explanation, or she has to put it on the agenda. And she's been giving us this, well, I'm going to put it on the agenda stuff, but it hasn't gone on the agenda, and it isn't on this Tuesday's agenda. You also don't see anything about racial profiling. You don't see anything about any of the other concerns that the city council said they would take out of the hands of the now defunct Citizens Police Review Board. You don't see the exemptions for political tabling. As I mentioned, February 13th, it became illegal to have a political table for more than an hour in any one spot downtown, even in those limited areas where it's still legal to table. It's mostly illegal to table downtown with a so-called display device. If you are within 10 feet of a building, kiosk, bench, drinking fountain, telephone, intersection, and there are a couple of other things, sidewalk cafe, and which rules out about 75 to 80% of the sidewalk, you are illegal and subject to a $162 fine, or up to 6 months and a $1,000 fine for the second offense. And you might want to come down to Merry Monday on Monday tomorrow. Merry Monday has been kind of fading into the woodwork with people not terribly interested and hasn't been happening much, although Food Not Bombs feeds there every Monday at 4 o'clock. I'm going to be back down there at 4 o'clock tomorrow, and I'm going to have a table. I think that table will just sit there for 2 hours, and we'll see if our local police department is going to enforce the move-along musicians law, or actually move-along political activists, because ironically, musicians are kind of exempted from that law. But political tablers are not, and Scott Kennedy and Mark Premack were promising that they were going to have this whole matter resolved with an exemption that they were going to bring back to City Council 2 weeks ago, and here we are 2 weeks later, and it isn't even on this agenda. So we may have to just operate illegally. Can you imagine? Anyway, that's cooking. Comment from John. You're still in the studio. What's up?
Well, yeah, Robert, what if you're saying about tabling? What would apply there? Would you have to move along every hour? Or what?
You have to move it along at least 100 feet. You can't come back for 24 hours. That's actually in the new Riley-Matthews-Rotkin law. It seems to me an unusual law. But it's all time, place, and manner, don't you see? You see, it's not content-restricted. Everybody is required to do it. However, it's interesting. Only those with display devices are required to do it, and musicians... accoutrements are now described not as display devices.
Even if you got a bumper sticker on your guitar.
Even if you got a bumper sticker on your guitar and a sign that says, please give me money. So, you know, even if you're soliciting, in fact, is now, musicians are exempted from the solicitation ordinance, which is good for musicians. I've got no problem with that. But if you're a political tabler, you are soliciting. And there is an additional law that says you cannot be 14 feet from a crosswalk, 14 feet from a building, which means you can only solicit as a political tabler in about 5% of the downtown space, and on most other sidewalks throughout the city, there is no place to solicit legally.
What's the clear definition of soliciting? Does that mean asking?
Asking for money or anything of value.
Okay, but if you're not doing that and you're just disseminating information or just informing, educating the public.
That's not soliciting.
Okay, so with a table.
But the table, having a display device is a separate ordinance which is prohibited within 10 feet of any building, 10 feet of any and so forth and so on, and has to move along every hour. In other words, that has nothing to do with soliciting. It has to do with having a display device.
Now, I want you to know that there's a very old, this goes back to the 1880 ordinances that I gave you a copy of. You can't walk around with a display device. You can't be a sandwich card, a sandwich sign.
Well, I've always liked sandwiches, but, you know, I guess in this case, I'll ponder that one.
But that would be the most movable display device I can think of.
Right. Well, that's going to be the issue tomorrow, Monday, a merry Monday. Come on down, 4 o'clock. Bring your table with you or bring your camera. We'll see what's cooking.
One last question, just to muddle the waters a little bit more. Is a T-shirt a display device?
No, it's display device has to be something on which something, which it doesn't just give information or it doesn't display a message. It's something on which items are held or displayed. It has to be something which displays items of some kind and not just written words or pictures.
So you had a trench coat and you had a bunch of pamphlets in there
that might be considered, if you were holding the items in your trench coat. Or if you were, again, this is all part of the let's get them street jewelers out of town. We don't want them stinking political activists messing up the downtown area, that sort of thing.
I think it's always useful to test the edge of the law.
Some of these laws, you need to be thrown out front, center, edge, and the entire body of the law. It sucks the big one. Let's see. We have some good news from L.A. Here's a story about, in a carefully arranged marriage of thinking globally and acting locally, the L.A. City Council voted Friday, that's day before yesterday, to oppose unilateral war in Iraq, but made sure to tuck a plea for the city's homeless into the small print. Now, that's unlike Santa Cruz, which has a war both on Iraq and the poor in Santa Cruz. Actually, no, they have a somewhat different. They claim they're against the war in Iraq, but they continue the war against the poor in Santa Cruz.
Well, they're doing it a little easier that way. They don't have to carry on the war in Iraq.
Right, and they don't have to really oppose the war either.
They focus their local resources on the war on the poor.
They aren't, again, throwing the city open to, let's say, war resistors. All they're doing is, again, making these sort of half-hearted symbolic gestures. Let's see. The compromise aimed at quelling criticism that local lawmakers have no business dabbling in foreign policy came after weeks of wrangling that split the council and unleashed a spirited debate on how the nation's second largest city views itself. Economic uncertainty, ought city leaders concern themselves with global affairs, or should they stick to the meat and potatoes neighborhood issues of the many of them campaigned on, from untangling traffic congestion to thwarting gang violence? We have great needs in our cities. We should not be spending our federal tax dollars bombing and killing other people in other countries, Councilmember Ed Reyes told the approximately 300 peace activists who jammed the council chambers for the decision. We are not a bunch of crazy councilmen. All we are saying is we are echoing the sentiments of those who are hurting. Mayor James K. Hahn signed the anti-war resolution late in the day, making L.A. the biggest city to take a stand against a unilateral U.S. invasion of Iraq. About 100 other cities, including Chicago, Detroit, and Philadelphia, have approved similar measures. An earlier vote on Councilman Eric Garcetti's resolution opposing a war without U.N. support fell one vote short of passage Tuesday, setting the stage for Friday's sequel. This time, Councilwoman Jan Perry smoothed over the peace versus potholes clash with an amendment pledging greater efforts to seek federal funding for homeless people. After a short discussion with those lawmakers who opposed the measure, keeping conspicuously silent, the council approved the anti-war resolution on a 9-4 vote. "Thank you," screamed an elderly woman in a canary yellow T-shirt as the audience erupted in wild cheers. Another demonstrator sporting a No Blood for Oil message across her shirt blew kisses at the council members. "It's very bold of the city to do this," said Fred Griesing, 42, a music video director who had slashed holes in his clothes, roasted them on his barbecue, and splattered them with fake blood for the occasion. "Local government is easy to reach, closer to the people. I mean, I don't think we could have walked into the back of the White House and done this." Although the city council typically deals in police reform, street paving, and other strictly municipal matters, it occasionally ventures into national or global affairs. 12 years ago, the council overwhelmingly voted to support the first Gulf War against Saddam Hussein's regime. It urged the Clinton administration to strike down its ban against gays openly serving in the military, and in 1985, after a long and emotional debate, it narrowly adopted a resolution declaring the city a sanctuary for Central American refugees. Santa Cruz City Council, take note. We're one of the preeminent global cities in the world, said Jaime Regaldo, executive director of the Pat Brown Institute for Public Affairs at Cal State LA. I think to duck the tough issues is kind of ludicrous. We have a very cosmopolitan population that reflects much of the world and has many ties to other countries. This is not some inconsequential water policy in Tanzania, agreed Park Skelton, a veteran Democratic strategist who has had a hand in many local races. Certainly, war in Iraq will have municipal consequences. There's a huge deficit at the national and state level, and you're talking about $200 billion to reconstitute Iraq. That's a major commitment. But Perry, whose district includes downtown Skid Row, initially opposed the resolution on the grounds that L.A. should first attend to its large homeless population, about 20% of them veterans of the armed forces. She challenged her colleagues to tackle homelessness with as much gusto as they denounce war. It just angers me, these people who purport to care about people who are less fortunate, she said after the vote. Let's see them put their money where their mouth is. They need to take a look at why they were sent here and how those policies impact people living on the street. Earlier this week, only 7 council members voted for the measure, but then Perry threw her support behind the revised resolution, and Councilman Nick Pacheco, who was absent Tuesday, backed it as well. Only council members Alex Padilla, Jack Weiss, Wendy Gruhl, and Dennis Zien opposed the measure Friday. All 4 were elected in recent years after promising greater attention to basic neighborhood services amid a backdrop of Valley and Hollywood secession threats. I didn't run on a foreign policy agenda, Weiss said after the vote. I ran on a Los Angeles agenda. I certainly have heard from a lot of my constituents that there needs to be more of a focus on local issues. I didn't get nearly as many calls on this resolution as I did on burglar alarms, which tells me something. On a related issue, the council unanimously approved a Weiss proposal, urging the federal government to increase funding to help the city guard against potential terrorist attacks. After the vote on the anti-war resolution, the audience poured onto the steps of the City Hall, bellowing anti-war chants. They were joined by about 200 students who had staged a walkout from the nearby downtown business magnet high school. Amid their enthusiasm, ex-Marine Don Carrari shook his head in frustration. Are they Americans? Carrari, 63, said incredulously. They are a bunch of showboating infidels. Carrari, who wore a God Bless America sweatshirt, criticized the council resolution as a paper tiger that served only to distract lawmakers from their local responsibilities. The city council should not be fooling with this. I'd like to know how much money they wasted today, he said, gesturing toward a phalanx of police officers circling the protesters. Wouldn't it have been better to take that money and buy some groceries for the homeless? You're on Free Radio.
Hey, just curious, Robert, what's your solution, counter-solution to war in Iraq?
To war in Iraq?
Yeah. What are you offering? What are you putting on the table?
I think we should drop Bush over Iraq. That's my solution.
Okay. How about if we just go over there and give him one big hug? He's misunderstood.
I don't like Saddam enough to give him a hug. You can hug him if you'd like.
Well, we need to do something about that scumbag. And we got to make people realize that it's not a war against Iraq. It's a war against Saddam.
Well, shouldn't we take care of our own scumbag first?
Saddam and Iraq are two separate things.
What's that?
Saddam and Iraq are two separate things. Iraq is a country struggling. Saddam is a man who is ruthless.
Yeah,
okay.
That's true. Sure is.
Just making sure everybody knows that.
Yeah, that's true.
Because these peace activists are really making me gag because they haven't offered one single solution.
Well, you know, there are a lot of dictators over there. I don't know if the answer is to go over and bomb them all. I mean, I don't think that's the way to do it. But I hear what you're saying.
Right. Why stop there? We got to hit Korea, too.
Yeah, and get rid of our local dictators, you know.
Hey, why not?
You're here. All right, I saw you.
All right.
And actually wanted to tip my hat off to the caller who I actually recently saw in a video. I'm going to try to set a video up on the sidewalk tomorrow, which shows you again the the next show is coming in. I'm a little bit behind my time here. Come on down tomorrow to Merry Monday. Surprise video if you want to check it out, 4 o'clock, assuming it's not raining. I'll see you again at the city council meetings Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, Huff meeting at 8 o'clock, special early time on Wednesday, and come on back at 6 o'clock for another edition on Thursday evening of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and we will take it from there. Thanks for being with us, and call us at 423-HUFF if you got more questions. Thanks.
In many a land, with many a gun, in many a hand, they came by the night, they came by the day, came with their guns to take us away with a knock on the door, knock on the door. Here they come to take one more, one more. Back in the days of the Roman Empire, they died by the cross and they died by the fire. In the stone Colosseum, the crowd gave a roar, and it all began with that knock on the door. Just a knock on the door, knock on the door. Here they come to take one more, one more. The years have all passed, we've reached modern times. The Nazis have come with their Nazi war crimes. Yes, the power was there, the power was found. 6 million people have heard that same sound. That old knock on the door, knock on the door. Here they come.